This is Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for April Baer. Some of Michigan's theaters aren't just waiting to be able to bring you in-person performances again. In fact, a coalition of 23 companies, including several from Michigan, are leaning in to create a virtual festival of works specially commissioned for this moment. It's called The Breath Project. The Detroit Public Theater, Face Off Theater in Kalamazoo, Western Michigan University's Department of Theater, and the Flint Repertory Theater are all taking part in this weekend's virtual festival. April Baer recently spoke with two of the artists from Flint, David Guster and Harvey, about the pieces they created in response to the racial injustice against Black people. Here's their conversation.
David Guster and Harvey, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
Hello.
I wanted to find out what kinds of theater-making experiences you two have had since lockdown. Harvey, could you say a little bit about where and how or if you've been able to perform this year?
Yeah. At the very beginning of lockdown, I would do little Facebook Live things. And I have a one-woman show called Harvey's Cartoon Cabaret, where I sing songs from animated television shows for about an hour. And so I would do that every once in a while. And then lockdown kind of got to me a little bit, and I was like, I don't want to do anything at all. And then moving forward, I got to participate in the Breath Project and also Race, which is another project that is kind of on a national level by Sojourn Theater. And there's a bunch of different theaters and theater companies making like these, I'm calling them Zoom plays. It's devised theater. So me and a group of four strangers and our director got together on Zoom to create this 20-minute piece about what a leader looks like in America at this time and what people in Detroit really want for a leader. And so that's a part of the Matrix Theater down in Detroit. And it's going to start showing later on this month.
Did I hear you say you're doing some work with Sojourn Theater based in Portland?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know them. I used to live in Portland. They're a fantastic company. They have a great process.
They have created this like theater piece called Race that has like expanded all over the nation to different theaters, and like many theaters all over the nation have their own race production. And so I'm a part of the one for Matrix Theater.
David Guster, tell me a little bit about performances and experiments that you've been involved with.
Yeah, so I actually, at the beginning of quarantine, was involved in a piece through the Empathy Project, which is a group out of New York. Since quarantine, they've been starting like these series. So series one, or volume one of their series through the Empathy Project, was focused on COVID-19. I wasn't involved in that one, but volume two was based on Black Lives Matter. And so I was involved in that production. They basically got a bunch of artists to submit works, and then they dispersed the works out to like different artists. So I got to do like a little short poem, just speaking about like the time. And then I'm also now working on a thing called Sits Probe Sessions that we're doing at U of M Flint. It's basically a showcase of plays written by Black playwrights. So we'll be doing Poof by Lynn Nottage, Black Top Sky by Christina Anderson, and we'll be doing, what is the last one? It's called Sunset Baby, actually, by Dominique Morceau.
Mm.
Yeah, so we're getting ready to film those next week, actually, and then they'll be available to the public.
It sounds like you've both had a real diversity of experiences. What have you learned about producing theater online?
I mean, the biggest thing is that, you know, it's just like live theater, you know, you run into problems like all the time. And it's just about like, you know, figuring them out pretty quickly, learning how to, you know, adjust, adapt, and just still stay motivated, you know, even though sometimes it can be like a little discouraging with all this like technology, trying to navigate all the technology.
Harvey, how about yourself? What are the lessons of 2020?
Yeah, I actually forgot that I did do an improv show. I do improv with Comedy Sports. It's a national thing, but I'm on the Detroit team, and I did an improv show with them. And when you do comedic improv and there's no one there to laugh at your jokes, you'd think it would be really awkward, but it's just a thing of being very confident in what you are doing and knowing that you're making the right decisions and you're making the right choices. So like nobody's there to laugh at the jokes or react, but it's like, I know I'm impacting them. Either they're saying something in the chat or it's like, I'm very confident in the thing that I've done. It really just makes you dig into your confidence because you don't get the instant gratification of an applause or a laugh.
It sounds like a perfect experience to get the courage of your convictions together.
Yes.
The Breath Project has asked all these different artists at all these different theaters to create original works that either touch on or are inspired by or somehow informed by the death of George Floyd and all of the moments that the community has been through in 2020 since then. And each piece is 8 minutes and 40 seconds long, which, as the world now knows, is the amount of time that George Floyd spent with an officer's knee on his neck. Harvey, your work is called Breonna's Prayer. Would you tell us about it?
Yeah. So Breonna's Prayer is, it puts the actor in the shoes of Breonna Taylor. So it's not me playing Breonna Taylor. It is me in the same predicament as Breonna Taylor, that I am going to die that night by the hands of police in my sleep. And so the piece, it's a monologue and it's asking questions and thinking out loud. And if I knew I was going to die, what would I want to tell the world before that? It's like the last rallying cry before going into battle, because unfortunately when you live in America as a Black person, every day is you going into battle and just being proud at the end of the day that you won.
I think what so many people found affecting in the extreme about Breonna Taylor's death was the fact that this happened in her own home, as you say, in her own bedroom. What kind of possibilities does that open up when you're setting a monologue there? What kind of feel does it establish for the audience's rapport with you?
The way that I set this up to be performed is in an actual bedroom rather than a set of a bedroom with a very small audience. The audience that I had was of three people when I performed it. And I ask questions to the audience, sort of breaking the fourth wall, but you can't break the fourth wall when everyone is inside all four walls together. There's no wall to break. So it's interesting to look someone in the eye and they're like 2 feet away from you and ask them a question that they're not supposed to answer. You just get like facial reactions. And so that really opened up a huge world of creative possibilities for me. I love doing immersive theater, but I've never done anything so small. Like I've definitely played to a small crowd, but not this small and this intimate and this heavy of a subject. So afterwards, it really like, it just breeds this great dialogue between myself and the audience on what it's like to witness such an injustice, like firsthand and 2 feet away.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Harvey. She's a theater artist in the Flint area. And we're also talking with David Guster. He is also a playwright and actor who is in the University of Michigan Flint Theater Department. They're taking part in the Breath Project, which is a collaborative festival by Black theater artists across the nation in reaction to the death of George Floyd. David, your project is called Nice to Meet You. Will you tell us the story behind it?
Yeah, so Nice to Meet You is actually my own personal story and experience with navigating being a Black student at a predominantly white institute. You know, I thought it was really interesting. I've always looked forward to going to U of M since I was a kid. And, you know, I got there and I just realized like it wasn't everything that I thought it was. You know, I realized there was a lot of things that I had to like work harder for. And I always felt like, you know, it was due to my skin color that I was like working harder than my peers sometimes. And so Nice to Meet You is actually a piece. It goes deeper into, you know, these like stereotypes that you might hear. You know, one example is like the kind of music that I listen to. I kind of have this thought process where it's like, you know, I know I want to say this answer, but I can feel, you know, the room kind of like nodding their heads in disapprovement of like, you know, my answer, assuming that because I listen to this kind of music that I also am interested in this and that. So Nice to Meet You is like this is who I am. And it is nice to meet you all.
I'm not going to ask you to reproduce the whole piece, but you talk about how this is a reaction to, you know, others' perceptions of you and others' assumptions about you, and the sort of it sounds like the sort of microaggressions that you deal with. How do you communicate that when you're communicating your side of the conversation? Could you give us an example from the play?
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that I speak to is like at the beginning, you know, I'm stating, hi, my name is David Guster. My favorite music to listen to is Drake. My favorite food is fried chicken, and, you know, I like to dance. And then it goes deeper into, you know, but if I say these things, I can feel all the white kids in my class mentally nod their heads like, okay, proceed. So I feel compelled to not say those things. I feel compelled to say that my favorite song is Johann Pachelbel's Canon in D, that my favorite food is a tall, rich glass of skim milk. But if I say these things, I feel like I'm coming off as pretentious for the white kids in my class and then too white for the black kids in my class. So it's always this like debate going on in my head about like, do I, you know, want to say these things and deal with the microaggressions that come with them and the stereotypes that come with them? Or do I truly know that these are things I enjoy and I should be proud and, you know, stand up for the things that I like to do, regardless on like what people think?
Yeah. Theater is very often the first and sometimes the fastest form of art to react to our times. And I just, you know, this work obviously is a product of the moment. Can you tell us about what, if any, conversations you've had this year that might have informed the writing that you did for this? Harvey, would you mind going first?
I have a very, it's not unique, but it's unique in my circles that my partner is a white man, and I'm very fortunate that my partner, he's very considerate and open and knowledgeable and is always educating himself on and asking how I'm doing with all of this stuff that's resurfacing this year when it comes to the movement for Black Lives. And so we have conversations all the time about it where it's just like, how do you keep waking up every day and going out and living your life when at any moment you could just not be here anymore? I say in the show, when you're Black in the United States, you kind of always know you're going to die, but you're just surprised when you don't. There's so many people that like Black people being murdered in America is the real pandemic. Like, we're in a pandemic, but Black people have been in a pandemic since the 1600s. And so it's like Bassem John, he was killed in his apartment because the police officer that shot him thought that that was her apartment. Is it a stupid reason? Yes. But that was the reasoning, quote unquote. But Breonna Taylor, there's no reasoning. There's nothing you can do or say that a person who is asleep was any sort of threat. And those other people were not a threat at all, but there's some reasoning that they can give, that white people can give to say that's why they deserve to be shot, because I was mistaken. But how can you be mistaken about a person who's asleep in their bed? Like, that thought is something that kept coming up in the conversations that I've been having. And thinking about that kid's prayer that they teach you, like when you're like a little kid, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Breonna Taylor died before she wake. And so that was like the biggest inspiration for, or the biggest, yeah, inspiration for writing this. Like, that was like the first thing I wrote down when I wrote Brianna's Prayer.
Well, David Guster, I wanted to ask you the same question. Are there conversations that you've had this year that informed what you ended up putting together for the project?
Yeah. So although this piece was written 2 years ago, it is still interesting how relevant it is, especially because I'm still in college. And so actually, it was probably about the middle of quarantine or lockdown. I started getting in contact with my former high school teachers, two teachers who have like changed, you know, my whole mindset on activism. They really have like encouraged activism. And they just are like, you know, two really powerful women that I know in my life. And so they actually got a group of us together to lead a protest in Flint. And it was really nice because it was focused on the youth and how severe it is that the youth is starting to understand like what's going on and how we can speak up for like what we believe in with all of this happening, you know, and how we can be a voice for the future.
I'd love to hear just what, if anything, it means to be able to produce this work in this cohort of artists at this moment.
I think that there was a brief moment where I had decided that I wanted to like stray away from this kind of work for a little bit, just because it seemed like these were like the only offers I was getting during this time. And I was like, oh, there's so much more I want to do, you know, so much more I want to show. But I think I am learning that, you know, this kind of work is really needed. And it's a great way for me to bring two of my passions, activism and theater, together and be able to share that like nationally with people who feel the same way all around the country.
Yeah, the same thing for me. When all this stuff was happening, I was like, I need to do like a creative outlet for it. And then anytime I tried to write something or anything, I just like felt bad. And I was like, this is making me sad. I just wanted to like not do work about that. So when I was asked to create this piece for the Breath Project, I was like, okay. And it kind of just forced me to make something about this. And it's really the best thing I've ever created. I think it's amazing. I am very excited for the festival because I want to see what everybody could do in the 8 minutes and 46 seconds, because it's a long time, but it's also a short time. So I'm very happy that Breath Project exists so that people can see Black creators create things about their lives and about their experience. And it's from Black people, by Black people, and through the lens of Black eyes.
My guests today have been Harvey and David Guster. They're both theater artists from Flint, and they're taking part in Flint Repertory Theater's contributions to the Breath Project, which is a national festival of work created by Black artists, inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement and the death of George Floyd and all the other elements that have come together for a truly, truly harrowing year. David, Harvey, it's been very nice talking to you. I want to thank you both for your work and your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.